Swiss Army Nation, welcome to your podcast. This show is about you, your passion, and your experiences. Join us for panel discussions, interviews, fan profiles, and so much more. When the curtain drops, the excitement begins. So let's go. Hello, my friends, and welcome to episode 137 of the Kiss Army Nation podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Pasquale Vary.
And I am Carlos Pera. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So on this episode, we're going to do what KISS didn't do on the final show at Madison Square Garden. We're going to thank and pay tribute to those people in front of and behind the scenes that got the band through 50 years of music.
And it's been a while since we did a discussion panel, and we're so looking forward to tonight's discussion. It's going to be very special. On tonight's episode, we have Patrick DeMontigny, and replacing Craig Patton, we have a return guest to the show, our good friend, Michael Bournasian. Welcome to the show, boys.
Nice to be back.
Hello, thank you for having me back. My third time. Do I get a green jacket or something?
You have a badge. That's right.
Okay, that's good.
A KISS badge.
I'll wear it proudly. No concern.
So before we get into the topic at hand, in the last few episodes, we discussed the final show and the KISS avatars. So we didn't get a chance to get your take on both. So Pat and Michael, what are your thoughts about the final show and the avatars? We're going to start with Pat.
The last show, everything I hate to say it, by the way, I was hoping to be proven wrong, but everything I said was going to happen did happen, which is nothing. I knew nothing special would happen. I think we still, you know, and it's okay. We all dreamed that something unplugged was going to happen, but I had no doubt that it wasn't going to happen. I think they just wanted to end it as it is and nothing special. And as I said, I may have brought this up before, Black Sabbath didn't do anything special when they ended. They just ended, okay, this is the last show. Thank you all. At least they did thank the people. Mm-hmm. Genesis, same thing. There was nothing special. So I didn't see why KISS would be any different. Unfortunately, I was right, I hate to say. And now the avatars, I really don't know what to make of it as of now. Something I'm scratching my head over this one, I have to be honest, still.
Were you surprised that that they showed that at the very last show?
Well, I wasn't at the last show, but I read about it, and I was like, okay. It felt like being at the end of a movie where it's like to be continued, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, but it's like, I don't really buy that. But again, that's just me. That's just my humble opinion.
That's good. That's what we want. Michael, what about you?
Well, unlike the two of you who were actually at the show, lucky guys, I wasn't. My last show was in Montreal. And but I was able to watch most of the final show online, thanks to, you know, people at the shows filming and stuff. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't expect anything special to happen. I would have liked to have had some kind of thank yous given at some point. I mean, many bands have done that. I was thinking before I came on, like, what's a good example of a band that did a final show and did it well and gave a lot of good thank yous? And the first band that came to my mind was the Allman Brothers Band. When they finished touring in 2014, and you can see this on YouTube, there's footage of their final show where they all get up at the front of the stage at the end of the show, and they say, they each give a little speech and thank the crowd and thank everybody who kind of helped them out through the years. I mean, it was very well done. And there's other examples as well. In the mm-hmm. in case of KISS, I mean, they have become such a well-oiled machine over the past decade or two, to the point where something out of the ordinary is almost, it would be like a real surprise kind mm-hmm. of thing. So no, I wasn't expecting anything special or anything like that. If it happened, great. I would have been the most surprised, I think. But I wasn't, you know, holding my breath in expectation for it. In terms of the avatars, I don't have anything specifically against them. I'm interested to see what comes of it. I think the timing of the unveiling was horrible. Okay. I mean, right at the end of the last show, when you know beforehand, and you know this has come out since, where I think both Tommy and Gene have said, well, there's still a number of years of planning left. Mm-hmm. And they're not at the final stage. Well, okay, well, if we're only going to see this in 2026 or 2027, well, what are you doing introducing it now?
There you go. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, if, for example, if you were going to launch this, let's say in January 2026, if it were me, you know, the president of KISS Avatars, I would, I'd do the unveiling probably in the first half of 2025 and, yeah. you know, build up expectation. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, okay, we've been told about this now, but we got to wait 3 or 4 years. It's kind of, it's a bit strange. That's a bit of a fumble in my opinion, but I don't personally have anything against this technology or anything. You know, I mean, technology takes us forward and, I think it would be interesting to see, you know, but, like I said, the unveiling, the timing was not good.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we discussed many times, it's another one of those KISS products. And, you know, some people buy into that, some people don't. But I think we all agree that the timing was not the right one, you know, just to announce it on the last show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that people were afraid to say something when the Avatars first came out during the final show. And anybody that said something was attacked online. And now Bruce Kulick says something, and all of a sudden, everybody's coming out with how disappointed they were with the final show and the Avatars and everything. And KISS is listening to the point where Paul had to come out and say something about the Avatars not being ready. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting time to be a KISS fan right now. It really is. Okay. So, like I said in the intro, on this episode, we're going to thank and pay tribute to the people who made a huge contribution to the band and helped propel them to 50 years of music. So here's how it's going to work. We have 5 topics: band members, management, original road crew, producers, and behind the scenes. Now, obviously, we can't talk about each individual person for each individual topic, so we'll discuss them generally. But we will name the people we are thanking when we introduce each topic. Is that okay?
Fantastic.
All right. So, Claudio, get us started.
There you go. So, an obvious start to the discussion is thanking the members in the band, of course, you know, past and present. Ace Frehley, Peter Criss, Eric Carr, Vinnie Vincent, Mark St. John, Bruce Kulick, Eric Singer, and Tommy Thayer. So how did they continue to keep the KISS machine up and running? Patrick?
Well, I think, you know, for the first 6-7 years of KISS, you know, the band was untouchable in the sense that you wouldn't want to change a member, but fate decided otherwise. Here comes Eric Carr. So all of a sudden, he brings the element that, hey, you could be in KISS as well. So I think each of the following member, whether we like some of them or some less, I think they each contributed to something to the KISS machine. And even after when they went on their own, the KISS sign followed them. So I think whether they were in KISS or after, I think once you're in KISS, it follows you for the rest of your life. And even with Union, you know, there was a wink to KISS. Ace and Peter, of course, they can't say, no, we weren't part of that. It's even Ozzy plays some Black Sabbath. So in a sense, it keeps the KISS flag going for sure, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Michael?
I mean, all those people have contributed to a large degree in some cases. If you take Eric, obviously the original 4 members, Eric Carr, Bruce Kulick, I mean, they've probably been the longest serving, Tommy and Eric Singer. You know, Mark St. John, not so much, unfortunately, but, you mm-hmm. know, that's it. That's the way it went. And same thing with Vinnie Vincent. You know, going forward, I mean, I think everybody is going to aside from obviously those that are no longer with us, Gene's going to be out there with the, it's, you know, he's already announced a show with the Gene Simmons band. I can see mm-hmm. him doing that for sure. I'm sure Paul will continue doing something, whether it's Soul Station or something else. Obviously he has to take into consideration his voice. But you know, I'm sure he will continue doing something. Ace is out there still making albums and still touring in the United States, at least anyways. And, same thing with Bruce. And, so the name is, people are out there. And as long as they're out there, as Patrick said, you're stuck with that tag. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, I was in Kiss for 5 minutes. Therefore, everyone knows me as the guy who was in Kiss. I mean, Mark St. John did plenty of stuff, but you know, up until his dying day, he was the guy who was in Kiss for 5 minutes. You know, I'm sure he would have liked to have stayed longer. That's basically it. And I think certain people carry themselves differently than others. I mean, I think Bruce and Eric Singer and Tommy have definitely done the best job in terms of replacement players, in terms of, respecting the heritage of the band and making sure that they keep the ball moving forward and keep, the fans happy and, as well as Paul and Gene happy. Peter and Ace have had their moments, obviously, and Vinny has definitely had his moments. So that comes down to personality, I assume, and upbringing and environment and everything. But, all of these people can do what they want. And at the end of the day, we're the customers. So we That's decide, right. Do we want to buy Ace's new record? Do we want to go pay money and see the Gene Simmons band? Do we want to travel to the States and see Ace do a show? That's up to us, mm-hmm. No one's forcing you at the end of the day. So that's basically it. No one, a lot of these people are not retiring. It doesn't seem like it. You have Paul, Gene, I mean, who knows what Eric Singer will do in the future, but I'm sure he'll want to do something. I'm sure Tommy will want to do something. You have a handful of guys there that are going to keep,
they're going to keep playing. Yeah, of course.
They're going to keep doing their. They're going to keep doing their own thing, but at the same time, they're going to keep doing the Kiss thing. Just by their association with the band. So
absolutely.
So it's not going away. Whether you like it or not, it's going to be there. So if you want it, it's there, and if you don't want it, well, obviously there's plenty of other choice.
You pass. There you go. Pask.
The contribution of Peter and Ace is undeniable. Every replacement member of KISS, except for Vinnie Vincent, are freaking saints. Because, the creative personality wants to create something for themselves, something to call their own. They had to put that aside to basically make Paul and Gene's vision come alive. So they did whatever Paul and Gene wanted them to do. And they did it to the letter, to the T. And what a job they did keeping the KISS machine alive, despite, I'm sure, what more they wanted that they couldn't get, specifically Eric Carr. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do other creative endeavors, and he couldn't because Paul and Gene wouldn't allow him because he had to be within the confines of KISS. So for them to now call it a sacrifice, to sacrifice their creativity to continue the vision of the band, hats off to them. And I'm sorry, but this is why I have very little respect for Vinnie Vincent, because Vinnie didn't see that vision. He didn't realize he was a part of something so special. He could have been seen as a legend today, as a part of the KISS machine, of the KISS-tory that kept the band going. And right now, he's nothing but a joke. And it's too bad about Mark St. John, because I think it would have been the same with him. He could have been something great. And yeah. Bruce Kulick now, in a sense, he has a bigger contribution to the band now than he did when he was in KISS, because he's continuing with the 80s machine. Mm-hmm. Utmost respect for each and every member of the band, less so, sorry, for Vinnie Vincent.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. I don't want to repeat myself, but actually not even touch on what you guys said, but I'm pretty much with all of you. Again, except for the issues that Vinny had, you know, with his personality with Gene and Paul, all of them extremely professional. And I think that we have KISS today thanks to all of these people. So the thing is that what Gene, Paul, Ace, and Peter, what they created was so huge that it was really tough. So in some other bands, you have replacements and you don't even know what their name is. But in KISS, you know, having the iconic image and the makeup and everything, it made actually the replacement work even harder for all of these guys. And when they took the makeup off, it became another band. But let me tell you, so at a certain point, you know, Bruce Kulick, he kind of kept the flame alive. And same thing with Eric Singer. Before the reunion tour, and then when after the reunion tour was done and the farewell tour, I think that Eric Singer and Tommy Thayer, being the professionals that they are, they knew that they were taking, you know, they were putting off the makeup of Peter and Ace, and they didn't care whether people were complaining about not being the original Catman or the original Spaceman. They did their job, and that's why the band lasted, you know, 50 years, like it or not. Same as Paz was saying, hats off for all of them. And I think we have to really be thankful for each one of them, even, you know, Marc St. John, as Michael was saying, you know, 5 minutes. But hey, you've been in KISS, you know, it's a stamp that you take forever with you.
Okay, so, you know, it's obvious that KISS would never have gotten this far without their managers, Bill O'Coyne, Larry Mazur, Doc McGee. Now, imagine if Gene and Paul knew back in 1973 what they know now and actually managed themselves. Would they have survived without Bill, Larry, or Doc? Michael, what do you think?
It's a good question. I think for smaller bands, medium-sized bands, bands that are just starting out, if because of lack of finances or otherwise, you can't have a manager and you want to self-manage yourself, I think it's possible if you have the business sense and if you have that acumen and if you have that discipline, very important word, you can do it. The thing with KISS is that where they went to eventually, where they, you know, eventually arrived around 1976 and never really changed after that point, they became a machine. Let's be honest, you know, even during the lower years, you know, even during, you know, tours where they didn't necessarily make a lot of money, you know, or weren't drawing the crowds like they used to, like, you know, the Creatures tour or the Revenge tour, mm-hmm. as great as those tours were, they weren't financially successful. But still, it's a machine that is going around here and there. There's tons of people working for you, whether it be makeup people, people putting up the lighting rigs, setting up the stage, driving the trucks. I mean, all of this takes a lot of work. So to self-manage at that point, and on top of that, be the musicians in the band, get up there every night and play two-hour shows, write the songs, record the songs, et cetera, et cetera. I think at some point you got to bring in somebody or, you know, a group of people or a management company and say, hey, you know, we want this to work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's not going to work if just me and this guy do it. you know, it's been working good for... It's been working good for 2 or 3 years, but hey, guess what? We're selling out 20,000 seat arenas every night now. I don't think we have the time to look at all the fine points anymore. So at some point, someone like a Doc McGee or someone like a Bill O'Coyne would have had to come in and say, "Okay, guys, let me help you out here." Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the way I look at it. I mean, hats off to Doc McGee for the past. What is it, 20 years
or 30 years that he almost 30 years.
that he was with the band? I mean, you can, yeah. I mean, he's been criticized in the past for certain things and stuff, but it's, you know, hats off to him for keeping that machine going, yeah. And hats off to Bill O'Coyne for getting the ball rolling at the toughest time, you know, in the band's career, you know, right at the beginning when, you know, they're not, you know, being financially viable, you know. You know, they're putting on great shows, they're putting out great music, but you know, where's the money? It's mm-hmm. it's going somewhere, but it's, you know, it's, you know, there's not that much of it around. It took a couple of years, you know, but Bill O'Coin helped push that through, you know, and, you know, Larry in the intervening years as well, you know, you could consider the non-makeup years lean years if you want to. I don't, but, you know, still, I mean, someone had to be there to drive this truck. You know, the bigger an enterprise gets, the bigger a business gets, the bigger an enterprise gets, you need that structure in place. You need somebody there or a group of people there, honest people, ideally, not always the case, but you need a group of people there who believe in you, who come in and say, yes, we're going to help you realize this. We're going to realize this together. And that's going to take a load off your shoulders and you're going to be able to do your jobs better. So,
yeah, you mentioned honest people. I didn't mention Paul Psychiatrist, who was a manager for a short period of time.
Yeah,
right. That is true.
Yeah. Patrick, what do you think?
I think they do need those people because, especially in the beginning, I think you had four guys who were really hungry, and I think they needed somebody to coach them. Even if Peter had played in previous bands and even recorded the album, I think they still needed someone like Brian Epstein with the Beatles, where it's like, okay, I'm going to start you up, guys, because you need someone from the outside looking in and say, okay, I think Bill O'Coin from, you know, past interviews, he was really the one who held it together with the original four guys. Bill O'Coin was really keen on keeping the original four guys together, and I think he did everything he could to make it last this long. So I think it's good that any band has a coach outside of the band to say, okay, this is what you need to do. Because sometimes the band members themselves, they're too within the situation to look at it clearly. And I think Bill O'Coin in the beginning, at least, was a very, very good coach. And I think he was also used as a referee when band members would fight between themselves. Bill O'Coin was there to make everything okay. And also, I think he took lots of risks for Kiss. I think every band needs somebody who believes in them. Mm-hmm. And after that, well, Larry Mazur helped Kiss through the so-called lean years. And Doc McGee got the big picture when Kiss reunited. Because, again, I don't think Doc would have entered the picture if it hadn't been for the reunion. Mm-hmm. I think he knew where to take this. When the reunion ran its course, he knew what to do with them afterwards, whether we agree or not. That's not the point. But he sort of, again, said, okay, let's take this over there. So you need guys like that to make the band better.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Claudio, how about you?
Well, I'm gonna try to be short on this one. But to me, if there's no Bill O'Coin, there's no Kiss. So as simple as that. To me, he's the fifth Kiss. We've always talked about, you know, and we're gonna touch on this later. You know, Sean Delaney and all those guys. But to me, the commitment and the vision that Bill put into the band, that's what he created, basically an empire. So we're still buying merch of these four guys in makeup that even though, you know, the vision might have come from, you know, trying to create four Alice Coopers or, you know, Gene at a certain point. You know, the machine, the well-oiled machine started with Bill and the merch and all of that. And if we fast forward in time, Doc, for the last 30 years, as Michael was saying, he was the one keeping the band alive, you know, doing all kinds of things, all kinds of shows. And let's not forget, at the beginning, you know, Bill dealing with four very strong personalities, you know, as Ace, Peter, you know, Gene and Paul. And later on, Doc, he had to do the same thing during the reunion tour. Mm. Unfortunately, it didn't last long. But huge, huge, huge. By no means, I think that Gene and Paul could have done this without those guys. And let's not forget, even though he was not the manager, you know, guys like Chris Lent, you know, all these years that he was with the band, he was essential for to keeping the band alive. And they were not doing really great financially, but he was trying. He tried and he did it. He could make the band survive in those difficult times. So hats off, you know, for Chris too.
I want to touch on something Michael said, that a band like Kiss, they're a huge band and they need someone to manage. Well, Kiss didn't start off as a huge band. It was Bill O'Coin that made them huge. I don't believe Paul and Gene had any idea of how big this band could be. And it was Bill that took them there. And Kiss would not be where they are today if it wasn't for Bill. And then you have the 80s, and I wonder, Kiss wasn't doing so great then. You know, the Crazy Night Show was like the it was like lackluster, you know. And he really pushed them forward with a vision of nostalgia. And with Hot in the Shade, man, that was one of my favorite tours and one of my favorite set lists. And that was Larry, you know, and then with Revenge, you know, he got them through the 80s. They were he threw the life jacket and they grabbed it. He pulled them back in and got them back on the boat. And there you go. He set the foundation for what the reunion tour was going to be. And now you have Doc, who is Bill O'Coin 2.0. Because listen, we love to romanticize the 70s. But in the 90s, 96 and above, Kiss was bigger and better than they ever were in the 70s. Their shows were you can't top those shows. So you have Doc McGee, who had the original vision and basically blew it up, made it even bigger than you can possibly make it. And you know, for Kiss to end after 50 years with one of the biggest shows they've ever done is unheard of. It's unheard of. You know, the gatefold for Alive 2. What other show would you put in its place? For me, it would have to be The End of the Road. It is
True.
the biggest show they've ever done, and
It
that
is
was
true.
50 years later. It's incredible. So hats off to them.
Good point. Really good point. You know, it's interesting because Kiss is giving us, you know, with 50 years, it's given us the we have the luxury to compare, you know, past and present, and you know the origins and now, and we often look back at the early shows with such a reverence. But those shows could never have happened without the original crew, the road crew, actually consisting of Rick Monroe, Peter Orecchiette, Mick Kempis, and of course our dear J.R. Smalling. So they made the ideas come to life. You know, their vision, you know, their dreams, the fantasy act, the act as they called it, they made it happen, running many, many risks sometimes, you know, putting the stuff together, putting the stage together. Do you guys agree? Pask, I'm going to start with you.
Oh, absolutely agree. And you know, the story of the original Road Crew is a sad one because they were there at the very beginning when Kiss was hungry, when they were trying to make it, when they weren't big and famous. It was blood, sweat, and tears with those guys. They did anything and everything for the band to get them where they were at 75 with Kiss Alive. And then what happened when they made it big? Toss aside. I can't believe the band did that to them. They should have been with them from the very beginning to the very end, as long as they could have made it, because they Kiss wouldn't have made it through the early 70s without them. So again, for me, hats off to them as well, because you know, we give Kiss so much credit, but we really take for granted the people in the background that sacrificed so much for them. And not even an acknowledgement. They deserve so much more than that,
Absolutely.
especially the original Road Crew.
Absolutely. And during those tough times, you know, the band, you know, traveling by bus everywhere to the most of obscure places, you know, sometimes getting into fights and everything. I remember when we read, you know, the book from J.R. Smalling, you know, they basically adopted, you know, the band members calling them the boys, so they could do anything for the boys. You know, it's yeah, that's interesting.
I knew J.R. Smalling. He was working with Live 75, and I was so touched when he said, "Pasquale, I consider you a friend." Mm-hmm. We shared a hotel room together. The talks that we had, the stories that he told me, I felt like I was there, and I felt what he was going through in the early 70s. So again, it hurts me even more to know that the way they were discarded,
yeah,
and how hurt they were because of it.
Yeah. But what's your take?
Yeah, I think those guys, the original crew, I mean, they like you said, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and they were there in the beginning, and they helped build the ship. And those original people deserve all the credit, but unfortunately, since they were fired so early in the beginning, they sort of like fell by the wayside, which I hate to say, but it is the truth. There's no other way to put it. And it was so many people know very little about them and very little about the contributions. And again, they helped build something. And while it was building up, they kind of missed the boat, and which is kind of sad. They deserve to be there during the hardcore years for Kiss was 76, 77, 78. They should have had a taste of that. They really deserved it because they started the whole thing, if we can put it like that. Or they were there when it was being created.
Yeah.
But they deserve the success as much as the band itself.
Absolutely. Michael?
Well, two of my favorite Kiss books that are not written by a member of Kiss are Kiss Alive Forever and Nothing to Lose. And the reason why I like both of these books is that you get interviews and stories from, you know, these kinds of people, not just the early road crew, but also people who ran the Daisy, people who worked for other bands who toured with Kiss, et cetera, et cetera. So you really get an idea of what these people did and sacrificed for this band and for any band, really. One book I read late last year, and I recommend it to anybody, really, is Geddy Lee's autobiography, a very well-written book. But he goes the extra mile to talk about how their road crew were like family to them. They had people who started off with them in 1974 and finished with them in 2015 when they played their final show. I mean, he talks about how Neil Peart would sometimes ride shotgun with the truck driver who was carrying, the equipment, just to kind of, not just necessarily for a change of pace, but also to put a human touch to, this person who is giving his life or making his career driving this truck so that he could, be able to play these shows and write the music, et cetera, et cetera. So it was very well done. So, to read that in the very recent past now, and, compared to the situation of, Kiss's original road crew, it is unfortunate that, people like this are treated that way. But, that's what it turned out to be. I don't think it's something I would want to do to somebody, treat them that way. I mean, then like Patrick mentioned, or 76, 77, 78. I mean, talk about a time when you would have wanted to have been part of the Kiss machine or the traveling circus or whatever you want to call it, And that didn't happen for these guys, but their contribution is, you can't touch it. Without it, I mean, sure, there could have been other people without them, but, someone had to be there to do that work and to have that faith and to have that, familial, feeling about the entire situation. Okay, these are our boys. We're going to get them on stage every night. We're going to make sure the pyro works. We're going to make sure the lighting works. We're going to make sure the sound is good. We're going to make sure that the headlining band gives them a proper sound check, et cetera, et cetera. It's sad to say it is what it is, but, I look at it and say, without them, then, Kiss would have had a more difficult more difficult time. But, you know, going back to Geddy Lee's autobiography, that's an example of a band, you know, treating their crew properly. Same thing with a band like Iron Maiden. They had a crew from their very early days. I mean, you know, you read the liner notes to their albums and it's like, oh yeah, I remember that name. I remember that name. I remember that name. You know, it's like these people, you know, they stick around, you know, because there's a loyalty factor there, you know, and they want to keep people around. You know, it's like, you know, companies talk about retaining employees. Well, it's, you're not just, you know, you're retaining experience, you're retaining loyalty, you're retaining, you know, so much, you know,
sense of belonging. Opposed to if you, that's right.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. As opposed to if you let somebody go, you have to bring someone in new and train them and, you know, who knows if they'll work out or not. Meanwhile, you got someone with 10 years of experience and you're letting them go. Doesn't make sense. You know?
You know, you said it all. So basically, I don't think I can find, you know, better words to express what you guys said. And, you know, the more we talk about contributions to the band, and I'm not taking away anything from the work ethic, you know, from Paul, Gene, Ace and Peter at the beginning and all of the other members. But, you know, the more we talk about this, the more I realize how lucky these guys were, how lucky, you know, Paul and Gene are today. Of being, you know, celebrating 50 years of their dream, of their vision. Because I think one of the key things in life is to be surrounded by the right people at the right time. And I think this is what these guys did. You know, from early on, you know, having Bill O'Conn, we talked about that. You know, Casablanca, they were doing everything for these guys. And, you know, the road crew, and you name it. So then, of course, when it became a huge company with a big success, you know, it's just a number, okay? And then they got rid of these wonderful people that they had such a sense of loyalty and belonging that maybe they couldn't find it after that. Maybe they didn't need it because, as you said before, Michael, it was a well-oiled machine. So then it became just a normal, you know, work for anybody. But yeah, you know, no doubt, you know, these guys, they made it happen, and they should have been treated in a much different way. But, and I was gonna mention Iron Maiden when you did, you know, and to me, even though it's business, because every band is business, there's also to me a human side that goes beyond business. There's people involved. And you have to take care of people, okay? Mm-hmm. So you cannot say that because it's business, anything goes. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So there's respect and there's you know, rules that to me, from the human standpoint, they have to be respected.
No amount of money is worth discarding your family, your friends. No amount of money.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking of the machine, the music. Obviously, we love Kiss because we love the music. And we credit the musicianship and the songwriting talents of the band, but is that enough? Can an album and the music truly succeed without a good producer, such as Bob Ezrin, Eddie Kramer, Michael James Jackson, Kenny Kerner, and Rich Weiss? So can a band, how badly does a band need a producer for the music to be successful? This time, we'll start with Claudio.
There you go.
It's tough going last. It's tough going last.
Look, you touched me on this one because that's one of my favorite topics, you know, talking about music and no doubt, you know, these names that you just mentioned, you know, Bob Ezrin, Eddie Kramer, from early on, you know, Eddie Kramer creating that wonderful demo that actually gave them the chance to sign Casablanca. Yeah. So just starting with that. You know, you cannot deny the influence and actually when they were so green, they really needed someone, you know, to do that job for them. And now looking back in time, sometimes we can criticize, you know, the work that has been done on the first two albums, you know, by Kenny Kernan and Rich Weiss because of the sound, because it sounds raw, whatever, not so polished. But that's what Kiss is. That was the essence of the band during those days. And I think that even Kenny Kernan and Rich Weiss, they might not have done an extremely well technical job, but they captured what the van was doing. Maybe not live. You know, we had to wait till alive to get a real taste of what the van was about. But and then, you know, fast forward in time, some of the records that are kind of different in the catalog, you know, full responsibility on Bob Ezrin, you know, Destroyer, The Elder, Revenge. There's like inflection points, you know, with Bob Ezrin, you know, another chapter in history. So undeniable. And well, Michael James Jackson also, you know, with during the non-makeup era, and actually with Creatures too. Unbelievable. You know, if I don't know how many of us here, but I'm sure that we put Creatures and Revenge on the top five, right? So and maybe Destroyer too. So thanks to these guys, I don't think that Kiss had the knowledge and the vision to create that kind of sound and to create those kind of records.
Okay, Michael, what do you think?
Does a band or an artist need a producer necessarily? No. Is it good to have one? I think personally it is. I mean, what's the one example of in Kiss's catalog where they didn't use an outside producer? I think it's Hot in the Shade, right? We all know what we kind of think of that record, you know, aside from the three songs. But you know, everyone who's come in and given a contribution in terms of recording the albums, whether it be Michael James Jackson or Kenny Kerner and Richie Wise, who I equate to Willie Malone, who produced the first Iron Maiden album, which sounds different than everything else that Iron Maiden have ever done. But that album too, their debut album, is a very raw, crunchy sounding album. It sounds different. There's some people who actually prefer that. But then Martin Birch comes into the picture and you got the classic Maiden sound. You know, same thing with Kiss. It took them a few albums, you know, but eventually they got to work again with Eddie Kramer. They started working with Bob Ezrin. And suddenly it's like, okay, this is what we want. You know, this is the bigger sound that we want, the fuller sound that we want. For me personally, in a situation like this, I think all of these people who have spent time with them in the studio, you know, deserve credit. It was only at the very end with Sonic Boom and Monster where Paul Stanley said, okay, I think I can do this on my own and I think I can do it well. And I think he did with those last two albums. They sound good. But before that, I think there always needed to be somebody there to steer the ship, you know, to push the buttons correctly, to get the levels right, to set up the equipment properly, you know, whatever. Everyone, you know, different producers work in different ways. Some have a more hands-off approach. Some want to get right in there and do everything right down to the details, spend weeks on drum sound. But you know, like I said, up only up until, you know, the 2000s, did, you know, someone like Paul Stanley have the experience and the confidence, I think, to be able to say, I can produce this band and do it better than anybody or as well as anybody who's done it before. But up until that point, you know, a Bob Ezrin played a big role. Eddie Kramer played, you know, a big role. You know, and Vinnie Poncia, you know, we're not mentioning him,
There you
you
go.
know, Vinnie's contribution as well, and Mast and Dynasty. You can like those albums or not like those albums, but they sound good. They sound good to me. You know, they're not in my top five, but you know, good on him as well. I mean, and you know, you can't talk about the Creatures album without talking about the drum sound. You know, it's like that's like the defining thing about that album. Could Gene and Paul have come up with that on their own? Yeah, I don't know. You know, so you know, just that alone, Michael James Jackson deserves a trophy. You know, it's like thank you for that drum sound, you know. So yeah, hats off to all these guys, even you know, even Kenny and Richie at the beginning for, you know, being able to capture, you know, Kiss in those primitive days, you know. So
Good, good. Patrick?
I think any artist needs a producer. I mean, some of them can do it, yes, and they can do it well. But for me, I think it's always the factor of having someone from the outside saying, this isn't so good, or maybe you should do it that way. I mean, even the Beatles didn't produce themselves. They had George Martin. Mind you, they didn't last long enough. Maybe after a while, they would have wanted to produce themselves. But my point is that I think there's always that outside person to give a clearer perspective. And like Michael said, would Gina Paul been able to come up with such a sound on, I was going to say Chris Nights, I meant Creatures of the Night. No, even like Crazy Nights, for example, I'm not a fan of that album, but I think the production is out there. It's really, mm-hmm. you listen to it and you go, wow, the production is really solid. Asylum had been produced by Gene and Paul, and there's a difference in the sound, mm-hmm. in the product. So that proves my point. I think you need someone to run the ship and say, okay, sometimes the choice isn't always good. I always believe that, God rest his soul, Bruce Fairbairn was not a good choice for Psycho Circus. Mm-hmm. Had it been someone like Hedy Kramer, the story might have been different. That's just my opinion, but I believe it was more in the middle. You know, Ace and Peter got along good with him.
That's a good point. Really good point. Really good point, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But again, getting back to the topic that, yes, they need outside producers. Results vary, but that what makes the KISS thing so nice is that there is variety.
This kind of dovetails into something that Patrick said earlier when we were talking about the managers. Patrick at one point said, you know, you need someone there to say no to you. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't always run it yourself. Yeah, I need someone there to say, no, that's not good. No, that's too loud. No, there's too much distortion. No, your drums sound like crap, you know, St. Anger. Anyways, but, you know, it kind of makes me think of, you know, if you go back to, you know, the second half of Elvis Presley's career, you know, it reached a point where his manager couldn't say no to him. No one on his crew could say no to him. Nobody could say no to him. He could basically do whatever he wants. Would he have been alive if he had someone in his life to say no? I think he would have lived a longer life, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just as an aside. But, you know, it kind of goes back to that thing where you need someone sometimes to say, I think you're wrong, or I think you shouldn't do that, or I think you don't love yourself enough, or whatever. You know, you need someone, you need that outside perspective, you know, because sometimes you don't see it. Mm-hmm. You know, you're too much in your bubble and you think, oh, this sounds fantastic. And then it goes out there in the world and no one likes it, you mm-hmm. know? And mm-hmm. maybe if you had that person in your, maybe if you had that person around, whether it be a producer or whether it be your manager or whether it be, you know, sometimes it's your spouse, for God's sakes, you know, someone to say, you know, you're going down the wrong road.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not right. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So in all of our discussions, I'm realizing something. So here's an analogy. KISS was never driving the train. They were always riding it, right? So imagine this. KISS is sitting on the train and they're basically asking, okay, where do we go now? So Hedy Kramer comes in. With the early stuff, it's like, oh, we're going in a fantastic direction, but let's go somewhere new. Where do we go now? And they get Bob Ezrin, and he takes them in a whole other direction. Oh, I don't like where we're going, man. Turn this train around. Let's go somewhere else. Goes back to Hedy Kramer. So that's how I see producers for KISS. They're the ones that drive the train. And KISS is the ones that sit there and basically enjoy the ride that these producers give them. And oftentimes when they try to drive the train themselves, it gets off track. They always go back to the tried and true producers. And they are a huge part of their music, a huge part of their legacy, something that cannot be denied.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And well, we're getting to the last point, which I think is going to be really, really interesting to talk about. So, and we always say that what happens backstage, it's just as important as what happens in the front of the stage. Every contribution made by anyone involved in the entire KISS production whether if it's a small or big, it's equally important in making the spectacle of KISS come alive. So I guess we all agree that we cannot take away the contributions of Sean Delaney and Neil Bogart, and not even we can take away the contribution of ghost players or session players, whatever you want to call it, such as Bob Kulick, Desmond Child, Rick Derringer, Dick Wagner, and countless others. You know, Jean Beauvoir, you know, we have so many in history. So, Patrick, how do you evaluate their contributions to the band? And we know that Neil Bogart, it's a complete different chapter, but, yeah. You know, I think it falls under the same category of contributions. So what do you think?
Well, it goes back to the original point that those people were there when needed. Like Sean Delaney, he came up with a lot of good ideas, like with the, I believe, the blood spitting, you know, all those things that we've come to know and love. So he had grand ideas, different from Bill O'Coin. Bill O'Coin was more, he saw the big picture and how, where to take KISS. But I think the ideas of what made KISS were more sort of like done by Sean. And also you got like Neil Bogart, who trusted KISS to sign them to his own label. So that's another major contribution where no one would touch KISS.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the ghost players, again, they were there when needed. And lots of fans don't realize this, but KISS is not the only band to use ghost players. You have someone like Anton Figg, who had to step in at a very unfortunate time.
There you go.
Or Bob Kulick for the same reasons. So those people have made a contribution, although not recognized at first, with the years they were able to get their recognition that they deserve. So again, they contributed. They were there when needed. So you no one can blame them. So in a sense, yeah, everything that happens behind the scene, every artist has a story like that. So we have to accept it and say, you know what? Well, thanks for the ones who were there.
But do you think that it takes away any credit from the band, knowing that there's some other session musicians playing, like in Psycho Circus, let's say?
Well, yeah, it does take away from the magic, I have to say. But it was to be expected.
Mm-hmm.
I think our expectations, again, were too high. But at the same time, should we be that surprised? No. I was disappointed at first, but not entirely surprised.
Okay. Busk, what's your take on this topic?
I want to answer the question you just asked, Patrick, because I can't stand the term ghost player, because a ghost is something you can't see. And they should be seen. And I understand that it takes away from the magic, but the session players, if there's ever going to be a session player replacing any member of the band, they should get full credit. And, you know, on Psycho Circus, they should have gotten full credit. Why is Ace and Peter getting credit for something they didn't do? I understand mm-hmm. about the magic and all of that, but imagine them as players. They're putting their heart and soul into the music, and they're not even getting credit for it. No one even knows it's them. What, for to keep the magic alive? In my opinion, and I'm not in the music business, but I just personally feel that's wrong. You know, and another good example is even tonight's podcast. An hour and a half before recording, Craig canceled. This episode would have been canceled tonight because, you know, we like doing this with four people. And we called Michael at the very last second, an hour before showtime. And he said, yes, you know, give me the questions and I'm not prepared, but let's go. If it wasn't for Michael, this wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. But what are we going to say? We take full credit for the show? If it wasn't for Michael, this show wouldn't have happened tonight. We wouldn't mm-hmm. release an episode on Sunday. So, Michael, thank you so much for coming on the show last minute and doing this. Not many people can do that. I know I can't. I need to be prepared. And someone tells me, come on now. I can't do it.
So he's a trooper, man. He's a trooper.
You really are. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. And why can't the band?
I'm not a ghost. I'm not a ghost tonight.
Absolutely not. And why can't the band do that? Why can't the band thank these people that got them to where they are. Psycho Circus happened because of these session players. Give them the credit they deserve.
And what do you have to say about Sean Delaney and Neil Bogart? I want to have your take on that one, Basque.
Oh, the fifth or sixth member of KISS. Sean Delaney, was a lot of the moves came from Sean. And did we know that? I learned that within a few years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And why wasn't that part of KISS from the very beginning, you know? Yeah. And again, I don't know. Everybody think Gene and Paul are these master geniuses of musicianship and merchandising and choreography. None of it is them. None of it. Let's give the people credit where credit is due. And those moves still happen today. And that's because of Sean. How powerful is that? It's just incredible. And you know, I can't listen to Deuce live without, you know, doing this. You see me do it. It's just automatic, you know.
And the funny thing is that when Sean Delaney was trying to teach them how to do it and what to do it, they didn't believe in that. So they were saying, no, we're not going to do that. Look how it worked, man, after 50 years, you know.
Let him drive the train. Sit there and enjoy it. Let him drive the train.
Yeah.
And Neil Bogart was insane. The man was a visionary. The man took chances. The guy had courage. He had guts. And man, he sacrificed so much for his craft, for these musicians. Yes, it's to make money. I get that. But man, I couldn't do what he, I could have taken the chances that he took. And you know, do people today do what Neil used to do? No way in heck would they do that. There's no way. No way.
This goes back to the well-oiled machine that I talked about at least a few times already this evening. You know, a lot of what we're talking about doesn't happen to such a big machine, a big organization, without all these other players. You know, if you want to talk about ghost players, I mean, I don't like it either. I like seeing people get credit, you know, like I like, you know, I mean, the latest, you know, any number of the last Rolling Stones albums are a good example. You know, you see who the session players are, you see who else played, you know, who played the trumpet. It's not Mick Jagger, you know, give that person credit. So yes, I would have liked seeing, you know, all these albums, you know, originally give the credit to these people, but not giving credit to session musicians is an unfortunate tradition in the music industry. You know, you can go back to the Motown records. You could even go to the disco records that Neil Bogart was very, you know, prominent on. And, you know, you have that issue.
Even Elvis, you go back
exactly,
in time.
Exactly. You know, it's only with later reissues and box sets that happened with Elvis that, you know, this person played. Oh, I know that person. He's a country star. He played on an Elvis record. Really? You know, it's like an education, you know, 20 years later. I'll go back to something I said at the beginning. Once you become big, you know, when you're small, you can handle, you can handle it. You know, once you become big, and you know, you have a larger audience and you have larger expectations, you need a larger machine and a larger organization to be able to help you get through it, drive you down the road, drive that truck for you, help you drive that truck, you know? So, you know, Bill O'Coin essential, Neil Bogart essential, Joyce essential, Sean Delaney beyond essential, all these people. I don't have any issue with, you know, anybody who's played as a session player, even, you know, when they had a keyboard player during the Crazy Nights tour, you know, he was kind of off to the side and in the back, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, let's keep the magic of the four guys. But meanwhile, you know, it sounds pretty good. I wonder why. It's because there's a keyboard player playing rhythm. You know, that brings up something I remember many years ago. I think it was in 2008. I think it was the first time I saw Poison in concert. Not my favorite band, but I was in Hartford with work and they were playing not far. So I drove about an hour to a casino to see them play. And they had a keyboard player on stage with them. You could see him on stage with them playing. And I just thought, wow, look at that. They actually are acknowledging this keyboard player who's playing with them. Yeah. Not just the four guys, you know, not just the original four guys. Great show. But you know, they were putting the keyboard player right on stage with them, You know, I thought, great, you know, what a novel idea. You know, but you know, if you take one of these people away, could they be replaced by somebody else? Yeah, sure. You know, but you know, these are the people that are part of the history. You know, could there have been another Sean Delaney? Yeah, sure. I mean, there's 1,000 Sean Delaneys out there, even today. But at that time, it was him there. He had some great ideas. He put some pressure on the boys and said, hey, you know, give this a shot, you know?
Yeah.
And guess what? It worked.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, Kiss being such a unique band, you know, both visually and musically and the stage and everything. Now I find that we're talking about all these different, you know, categories of people who had a huge contribution, and they all somehow connect to each other. You know, when we're talking about session players, and we were talking, you know, like 10 or 15 minutes ago, we were talking about producers. So when Bob Ezrin for Destroyer, he had to get the product out, and he wanted to have a specific sound. And then for any reason, you know, Ace was not available or he couldn't play the way he wanted. And he brought another guy, you know, to play a solo. And there you go. So sometimes when the machine has to deliver and it has to be well oiled, you can use any tools that you have in your hands to make it happen. So, of course, it's against the magic and, you know, what we want, this fantasy of having the four guys being like friends forever and playing together in every record. That's not the music business. So they put their hands in their kind of resources that they have to make a product. They have to be credited. Absolutely, I fully agree with you. But you know, so essential and so interesting how everything interconnects. So. Great talk, Pask. On to you, my friend.
You know, we did this episode because no tribute was made to the many people behind the scenes. But if you remember what Matt Porter said on a previous episode, if the band did that, they were bound to miss somebody. So maybe we have missed somebody. So Kiss Army, it's really important that you tell us in the comments section if we missed somebody, who did we miss, and how did they contribute to Kisstory?
And, you know, just some closing remarks. I have no idea, Pask, why we took so long to have a discussion panel.
I know, right?
This is so much fun. And once again, great contributions, guys. So thank you so much, Pat and Michael. You know, Michael, you know, with an hour to go into the recording, you know, making yourself available, you know, that's highly appreciated. You know, thank you very much. And Pat, as usual, you know, a big part of the Kiss Army Nation podcast as for a long, long time.
Thank you so much,
guys. It's been great. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. To the Thank Kiss you. Army, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas, please send them to talktome@kissarmynationpodcast.com. Please like and subscribe and support the amazing guests we have on our show. And until the next time, remember, never stop rocking. Take care, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, like and subscribe on YouTube or follow us on Spotify, Podomatic, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to make yourself heard. Leave us a comment on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. See you all soon, Kiss Army.